The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 19, 1992 in Miami, Florida. The class begins with a reading from the Bhagavad Gita, 8th chapter, 10th verse.
Chalena Bhaktya Yukto Yoga Balena Chaeva Bhuvor Madhye Pranamavesya Samyak Satang Padang Purushan Upaiti Divyam. One who at the time translation from Sanskrit to English. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows, and by the strength of yoga, with an undeviating mind, engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord in devotion, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Purport. In this verse it is clearly stated that at the time of death, the mind must be fixed in devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For those practiced in yoga, it is recommended that they raise the life force between the eyebrows to the Ajna Chakra, the practice of Shat Chakra Yoga involving meditation on the six chakras is suggested here. A pure devotee does not practice such yoga, but because he is always engaged in Krishna consciousness, at death he can remember the Supreme Personality of Godhead by his grace. This is explained in verse 14. The particular use of the word yoga balena is significant in this verse because without practice of yoga, whether Shat Chakra Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, one cannot come to this transcendental state of being at the time of death. One cannot suddenly remember the Supreme Lord at death. One must have practiced some yoga system, especially the system of Bhakti Yoga. Since one's mind at death is very disturbed, one should practice transcendence through yoga during one's life. Thus end the translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, of text 10, chapter 8 of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, in the chapter entitled Attaining the Supreme. Translation again. One who at the time of death fixes his life air between the eyebrows, and by the strength of yoga, with an undeviating mind, engages himself in remembering the Supreme Lord in full devotion, will certainly attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the object of life. Is that at the time of death, when we leave this body, we can go back to the spiritual world so we can attain to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. According to the Bhagavad Gita, there is no death for the eternal soul. Only the body dies. When the body is no longer habitable and we have to leave the body, we, the conscious living force in the body, depending on the type of consciousness we are in at that moment, we will attain that kind of existence in our future birth. So, if someone with an undeviating mind is able to concentrate, remember the Supreme Lord in full devotion, then he will certainly attain to the Supreme Lord. That means that they achieve the highest perfection. The two types of yoga are mentioned here. There's the yoga of Sat Chakra, or the sixth chakra, starting from the Kundalini Chakra up to the Brahmarandra Chakra. There are six different chakras in the body, and the starting from the Hatha Yoga system through pranayama and meditation, one can move the living force through the different chakras. This process is very tedious and requires a lot of practice to be able to master this art of moving the life force through the different chakras. But if one is able to do so, then they can control the mind, and at the time of death they'll fix the life force in the third eye or between the eyebrows. And then, by remembering the Supreme Lord, they can immediately transfer themselves to the spiritual world. Now, for those who do not know the science of mystic yoga, Hatha Yoga system, there's another yoga system which is based on intelligence and devotion rather than on the mechanical expertise of controlling the life airs through the bodily chakras. If someone develops their devotion and their spiritual intelligence, they can practice Bhakti Yoga. The Bhakti Yoga system is not dependent on the mechanical manipulation of the soul in the life air, but is rather a direct method of coming in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through mantra, through service, through devotion. So, for all yogis, the object is the same: to go back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If we're serious about solving the problems of life, then we have to focus on the object of life and try for it. There are different... This is an example about how once there was a boy who had a boil on his back. You know that example? I told it? Huh? there that boy, he was having this very bad boil, and his mother and sister tried to cure it, the uncle tried to cure it. Finally, the father brought a doctor. The mother and the sister, they tried to cure it by blowing. They brought, but that wasn't putting nice herbal leaves around the boil and blowing on it. But still, it didn't go away. The pain came back. So then, uncle came, the brother of the mother, and he said he knew a cure. He said the best solution is just kill the boy. Then all the problems will be finished. So then, the mother was not very anxious to accept his suggestion. When the father came and saw the situation, their 9-year-old, 10-year-old boy is crying, so much pain through his boil. He brings a good doctor, and the doctor does the operation. When the doctor pulls out the knife, the boy is afraid that he's going to kill him. And he says, I don't want to be killed by this doctor. Of course, the doctor has no intention of killing the boy, but just to cure his illness. So the doctor operated on the boil, took out all the bad blood, pus, and this way the boy immediately got relieved. So the three different cures were mentioned. The natural cure with the leaves, the cure of the uncle to kill the boy, and the final cure, bringing in a qualified doctor who went to the root of the problem. So these are compared with different processes of yoga or self-realization. The first process is compared with which yoga? Who can say? Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga, rather Karma Kanda. Normally people think that if I'm suffering, the solution for my suffering is have a good time, enjoy more. But that doesn't really take away the cause of the suffering again, it just postpones it. The real problems of life are still there. The second solution, when the uncle said, kill the boy, what is that like? Can anyone say what philosophy, what yoga? Like Jnana Yoga, the impersonal yoga system where they want to merge into the light. If you become one with the light, you actually are sacrificing your own individual perception. It's like a spiritual suicide. So that's like killing the boy to solve the problem. I'm suffering in the material world, so the solution, let me become one with God, merge into the light, and I'll cease to exist as an individual. All my problems will be over. But this is not acceptable to a bhakti yogi. The bhakti yogi has a different viewpoint. What is the doctor like? The example of the doctor who can say. The bona fide spiritual master who comes and he knows what the problem is and he cures it. This is the basic solution. We have to have a bona fide spiritual master to give us the proper guidance. He can see the problem, he can immediately solve it. So devotional service is a permanent solution. Bhakti yoga is a permanent solution. Initially, it may appear bitter because it seems that the bhakti yogis are somehow controlling their lives too much by ordinary standards. when all the yogis can have to control their life. But the bhakti yoga process is actually very satisfying, very joyfully performed. So although initially it may appear that the bhakti yogi is somehow or another restricting his activities or her activities, but the actual process is to bring our level of perception to the highest level so we can perceive a real spiritual bliss. So I live in India, in Mayapur, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he brought this process of bhakti yoga to the common people 500 years ago. He appeared in India 506 years ago. Every year in the month of March, more or less, we celebrate his appearance. And this year we had a very big festival with hundreds of thousands of people attending and delegates from all over the world. So we went on a padyatra with Lokanath Maharaj around the nine islands of Navadvip, of the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. It said that the place in this world where he appears is a very special spiritual holy place. And it's comprised of nine different spiritual islands. And each of those islands has its own history. There are various historical spiritual places in each of these nine islands. So he visited all of the nine islands by walking, walked about 5 to 10 miles a day. Visiting the different holy places. Camping out every night. So, in this way, we are able to hear so many different pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. How Lord Chaitanya delivered the conditioned soul in this age of Kali by giving this very wonderful process of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. There are nine different islands. As I mentioned, each of the islands corresponds with one of the nine processes of devotional service or bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga has nine processes, starting from chanting the holy names, the mantras, hearing the mantras and hearing the classes, remembering what we heard, what we read, hearing, chanting, and remembering. Then there's another six other processes, serving the lotus feet, offering obeisances and prayers, worshipping in the temple, accepting oneself as a servitor of the Lord, accepting the Lord as one's friend, and surrendering everything to the Lord. These nine processes of devotional service can be performed together or individually. If anyone can do even one of the processes perfectly, they can achieve all perfection in life. So, we went to the different islands where these different processes are predominant. In the the island of Godramdweep, which is the island for chanting, our spiritual great-grandfather, Guru, His Divine Grace, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he took up his residence. And there he was worshipping Lord Chaitanya with his family and children. Although he had family and children, but he was a very great spiritual master. He would take, he would rise in the middle of the night and he would spend the night writing his literature. He would chant early in the morning. During the day he'd do his work. In the afternoon he'd go out and do preaching. And then come back again in the evening, would be with his family. Like this he had a very full day. And he had his own private temple in his compound. There was another Vaishnav, Gorkishore Das Babaji, who was in the renounced order. He had no wife, no children. He wore a loincloth. And every day he would chant hundreds of thousands of times, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Although he was so austere, he respected Bhaktivinoda Thakur for his spiritual purity. And so he lived in a very small hut by the side of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house. And there he would chant Hare Krishna and he would discuss with Bhaktivinoda Thakur Krishna consciousness. So in this Krishna conscious movement, there are both those in the renounced order who are not married, there are also married people who with husband and wife together they practice Krishna consciousness. The real focus is to be completely fixed, to be absorbed in meditating on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, meditating on Krishna. So the whole life is molded around the meditation. Not that we make time to meditate, but actually the life is molded around, it's centered around the whole process of Krishna consciousness. And we make time for doing our other material activities so that we can keep body and soul together. But the principal focus should be to get back home, back to Godhead. So, we went to one place called Madhyamdweep, which is the island of remembrance. And there we heard how one day Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was chanting kirtan with his devotees. And a group of cowherd boys came to him and invited him to come to their house. He was hesitating, but when one cowherd boy came and said that my mother used to work voluntarily in the house of your mother, Sachi Mata, and she was accepted as her younger sister by Mother Sachi. So therefore, she's your auntie. So she'll be very happy if you come to the house and she'd like to give you some sweetmeats, milk sweets, sandesh, rasgulla, different types of sweets made from milk and cheese. So Lord Chaitanya went with this cowherd boy for this kirtan party, chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And he saw that there was a very nice man-made lake. But a cow, when he went near the lake, the cow started to moo very loudly. Didn't want to go by the water. So So Lord Chaitanya said, what's wrong with this lake? They said, well, this lake has got a crocodile in it. So none of the cows go and drink the water out of fear of the crocodile. So the Lord Chaitanya went by the lake and they started chanting a big kirtan, chanting Hare Krishna with the Madranga drums and the cymbals. As they were chanting, all of a sudden this crocodile came out of the water. And all the villagers became frightened and they backed off. But the crocodile came right up to Lord Chaitanya and laid down flat right in front of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu touched his lotus feet to the head of the crocodile. And before everybody's eyes, the crocodile changed into the form of a divine-looking boy. Everyone was astonished. So who is this divine-looking boy? He doesn't have features exactly like a human being. He has the features somewhat different, unique, very good-looking, but also very brilliant in his complexion, with light coming from his body. It's a recorded historical fact 500 years ago. So they ask, who are you? And the boy explained that I actually residing on another planet. It's a higher planet in the universe. And I live there. And I was being naughty, and there was one yogi who was able to travel throughout the universe by mystic power. He had his own special airplane he could travel around. So he was resting in the forest of our planet. And I was very naughty. His name is Durvasa Muni. I went and I cut off his sika. I cut off part of his hair. And then when he woke up and saw that I had done this using some powerful mystic power, he forced me to come to this planet as a crocodile. When he gave me that curse, then I begged him to please, it was a mistake, I'll never do it again. Somehow you have to forgive me. So once I've already cursed you, I can't do anything now. But since you are requesting, then you'll be delivered in the age of iron. When the golden incarnation of Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, then he'll deliver you. And then you'll be able to regain your original position. So he brought this heavenly boy, extraterrestrial boy, he offered his obeisances to Lord Chaitanya, and he walked around Lord Chaitanya several times, taking his blessings. And then Lord Chaitanya told him that your parents are looking for you, you'll go back to your planet. And then that boy was picked up and taken off to his planet. And Lord Chaitanya then went on over to the cowherd boy's house and said, they offered him the milk sweets and nothing happened, you know, just one day in the life, you know. One day in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. So actually in the Vedas there's many mentions of extraterrestrials. That actually there's life in all the different planets of the universe. Not necessarily life the way we know it. There's also life the way we know it. There's also other types of life, different dimensions. But somewhere, I mean everywhere, there's some form of life on one dimension or one level or another. This is confirmed various places in the Vedas. Previously, in the previous yuga, it was very common for the very elevated human beings to have communication with the residents of other planets. But that was because there was a common spiritual objective. The residents on all planets accept that there's one Supreme Lord, one Supreme Godhead. He is the Lord of the universe. One of his names is Jagannath, the Lord of the entire creation, Lord of the entire universe. So there's a common brotherhood, not only amongst human beings, not only amongst the living creatures on this planet, but in all planets, in all star systems in the universe, because we are all united under one common supreme personality of Godhead. So when the people on this planet were more conscious of Krishna, more conscious of the supreme personality of Godhead, they had much in common on the spiritual platform with residents from higher planets. And that time there was very favorable communication mentioned in the history given in the Veda. But when people began to become degraded and lose their spiritual force, they stopped visiting from other planets, at least for making any positive kind of communication. There may be visits from lower planets, other planets, but not in the same way there was before. But this was a unique situation where Lord Chaitanya delivered this resident of another planet who somehow fell down here in a crocodile body. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he walked on this earth like a human being, he was actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Came with a very special mission to give us love for Krishna, to give us this highest spiritual bliss, highest spiritual understanding in a very easy process. And he intended that it would not only be spread on this planet, but on other planets also, all over the universe. But especially in this planet, he came to give the mercy, so we should take advantage of his mercy. A human being is not very powerful if they don't spiritually develop. A human being is just a little better than an animal if they're not spiritually developed. But if a human being spiritually develops, they can develop to the highest level, even higher than highest living entities in this universe. Because a human being is able to establish a direct communion with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Once that is established, then that human being becomes a spiritualized person. They're considered Brahmanas or Vaishnavas, liberated souls, even while living in this universe. So that was the purpose that Lord Chaitanya wanted to achieve, to liberate the human beings so that they rise above human consciousness to divine consciousness, bring them to the original platform of complete spiritual awareness. When one is awakened, then naturally he wants to help others to also awake. So this is the process of Krishna consciousness. To perfect one's own life and to help others to understand what is the real purpose of life. Why are we come here? What are we meant to be doing? What is the goal of life? When people understand, then their life is successful. So thank you very much for coming here. We have regular programs in the morning, many days in the evening, so that people can cultivate this spiritual science and very quickly achieve very clear understanding or realization of the purpose of life. And any questions? Preguntas, prasnas. Yes. Prabhupada used to call the Atma, soul, as a living force in the body. We are the living force. Everyone can understand that there is some living force in the body. Dead body doesn't have that living force. People generally say, I have a soul. But the Vedic viewpoint is, I am the living force. I am the soul. I have a body. In India, it's common that when you greet people, you don't say, how are you? You say, how is your body? Apanar sarir kemon ache? How is your body? Aapka sarir theek hai? Is your body alright? Because the living force is always alright. Only the body has got good and bad situation. We have this temporary material body, and we have to realize, if we can realize our real self, you see, then that brings our consciousness to a level beyond bodily consciousness. Then we can see things as they are. Then we can utilize the body without being frustrated by its peculiarities and diseases and other problems. We can remain in a blissful state of consciousness in spite of various changes in our bodily situation, mental situation. Any other questions? We come originally from Krishna. Krishna says, Ahang sarvasya prabhava. Everything is coming from me. So we are also coming from Krishna. We are minute parts of Krishna. So we always existed, we always will exist. We are coming from Krishna as beyond time. We are part of Krishna. Krishna said we will always continue to exist. Because Krishna says that we always remain individuals. He said, I'm an individual, you're an individual, we always remain individuals. If you have one candle and with that candle you light another candle, once you light the other candle, it's not that you take and put together, you know, it becomes two, it still remains two candles, there. Somehow Krishna ignites, when he expands, that expansion, that's an eternal situation. Even within Krishna we exist. But then when we are inside Krishna, we may not be conscious of our existence. If we're outside Krishna, we are conscious. So that's why the devotees, they don't want to merge inside of Krishna again and be unconscious of their existence. Because there's much more experience, much more happiness, much more bliss, much more satisfying to Krishna if we are individually serving Krishna voluntarily in a loving relationship, rather than if we are just trying to merge in his energy. Yes? What do you mean?
When we get the human body,
Everything is originally coming from Krishna. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that impersonal Brahman is also coming from Him. Brahmano Pratishtaham. So everything is coming originally from Krishna. So we originally also coming from Krishna. We're part of Krishna. So we have originally a spiritual form. When we are in the material world, a spiritual form is dormant and becomes like a seed. And in the previous verse here, it explains the living entity is 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair. But the Lord is so inconceivably small that He enters into the heart of this particle. Therefore, He is called smaller than the smallest. So we are a very minute spiritual atom. Sometimes a scientist operates in the heart and says, I looked, I didn't find any soul. So it doesn't exist. But the size of the soul is only a small atomic size, 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. And Krishna is so powerful, He also enters inside the soul. He is the soul of the soul. But this very small atomic spiritual particle is more powerful even than millions of suns. Because the sun has a beginning and an end, but this spiritual particle has got no beginning and no end. It's eternal. So this spiritual spark, this little one little atomic, we find now you got a big computer. It has a little chip called CPU. It's able to process millions of data informations in 1 second. So many millions. And they keep getting smaller and smaller components. So Krishna is so expert, the smallest component is the spirit soul. But it is so powerful that it is able to give the power to an elephant's body, to an ant's body, to human body, to even other extraterrestrial bodies. The spirit soul is not different, but the consciousness is developed differently. So as a human being, we are in the evolution of development of consciousness to the level now we can understand ourselves as a spiritual entity rather than just as a body. So human form of life is meant to realize the self. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was sometimes asked, well, why, how is it we fell into the material world? What were we before? So he said that since we cannot remember what the spiritual world is like, the spiritual world is a completely different creation, a different situation than this material world. And since we are understanding everything from a material point of view, it's not possible. It's like someone dreaming, trying to remember what it's like to be awake. But when you wake up, automatically you know what it's like to be awake. Another example given, if you fall into the ocean, from one of these ocean liners going from Miami to the Caribbean, and they send a life raft to pick you up, a lifeboat, you say, well, before I get on the lifeboat, I want you to tell me, how did I fall in? What was the reason? What was I doing when I fell in? Meanwhile, all around you, the sharks are starting to come in. Are you going to sit there and start discussing, well, before I get on a lifeboat, you know, I want to have a thorough, you know, explanation exactly what was the reason why I fell in? Was I covered by my insurance policy at that time or not? You see, these are later questions. First, you want to get out of the shark-infested water, get in the lifeboat, get back on the main ship, and then you can find out what happened, whether you were taking too many drinks or someone pushed you or there was a big wind or you lost your balance or whatever it was. Once you get back to the spiritual world, then all these detailed questions will be automatically answered. Just like when someone wakes up from a dream, automatically they remember everything. But right now, we had to get out of the soup, out of this ocean of birth and death. When we get into our liberated platform, then all these individual mysteries will be revealed. It's just because we can't really understand it at this point. It's like a very hypothetical, theoretical discussion. Because there's no way that we can explain what it's like to be liberated to someone who's not liberated. And that type of detailed way. Any other question? Okay, no. Asking that, is every cell in the body a living entity? And when we are practicing devotional service, what happens to all these other living entities? I asked this question just a few weeks ago in Atlanta. We were discussing Bhagwat Das, who is the Ayurvedic practitioner. He said he found evidence in the Vedas that says that each of the cells is also living, but they're subordinate to the Atma. Their role in the body is supporting to the role of the proprietor of that particular body, or the living force in the heart. When there's an identity crisis amongst the cells, who's the boss? And some cells start to act independently. That's what you call cancer. And they start to renegade and do various things like build tumors and things like that. That's the explanation he gave. I didn't see it written down, but he claims that he found evidence of this. In any case, in the Bhagavatam, fourth canto explains that this body is like a city with nine gates. It's got so many different living entities in it. You've got worms in you've got microorganisms. One of these bodies filled with different kinds of entities. And there's a balance kept. Now, we can go into this all, the physical analysis, but what is the whole point? The real point is, what is the actual purpose? Okay, we're in this material body, it's got so many interesting aspects to it. What are we here for? What is the actual purpose for being in this body? The material world is so wonderful, it's got so many minute aspects, we go on studying it ad infinitum, without any end. But actually the whole purpose is really to transcend the temporary material bodies and return back to the spiritual world where we came from. To achieve full God realization. To realize our origin. Then all these other questions don't really matter. That's the actual principal purpose. Of course, if somebody's interested in the details of how the body works, how the cells work, what is the coordination between the principal living force and all the other bacteria and cells and so on, you could talk to some Ayurvedic doctors and they can give you more details on this balance in the body. It's a very interesting topic. But they'll also say that if a person is spiritually strong, automatically things become balanced. If a person has very good habits, eats properly, everything, then there's a natural harmony in the body. And when spiritually one's weak, when one's activities also become irregular, unclean, and so on, then you get various difficulties which create disease. You get imbalances which create disease. So generally, if someone is very spiritually responsible, very spiritually conscious, developed, then to a large degree, it's also very helpful to maintain a good balance physically, mentally as well. Although there are certain guidelines. So everything in your body, if you're taking Krishna Prasad, everything can become blessed. One great acharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed that I don't want to get a big birth even as a Brahma on a higher planet if he's not a devotee. I'd rather be born as a worm inside the intestine of a devotee so then I could eat the Krishna prasadam that comes down in the devotee's digestive tract. So even the worms, they're getting the mercy, they're getting some prasad. So he considered to be a worm in the stomach of a devotee better than being a universal controller if that person wasn't a devotee. So from that evidence we can say that even the worms are blessed in the stomach of a devotee. He's asking that when we return to the spiritual world, will we maintain our individuality and our free will? Isn't there a danger that we can again fall back down? Krishna says that Navnubandhi Mahatmana Sansiddhim Paramam Gata. Once someone returns back to the spiritual world, they don't make the same mistake again and come back down. Once one comes here, they go back to the spiritual world, they're not so foolish to make the same mistake. See, out of innocence or some reason or other, they may come one time. But if they go back, they never make the mistake again. That's what Krishna said. But if you go into the light, that's an unnatural situation to be in, the impersonal effulgence, the light. Eventually you want to again act, because our nature is to be active. If we don't know about spiritual action, we'll do material action. And then we'll fall down again from the spiritual light and come back again into the material world. That's why it appears that they're coming from Brahmajyoti. Because someone may have gone to Brahmajyoti, come back again, go, come back. Until we get to the spiritual world, we're going to come back again.